Welcome to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter at Highbury Squad. In fact, it's the same on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and eventually iTunes. Join me, Sophie, aka at Soccer Diva, Amanda, aka at GoonaGirl1969, and our very special guest, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. It's just like being down the pub with your mates.
Welcome to another episode of the Highbury Squad. I've completely lost count. I think we're on 20-something. Wow. Super Kevin Campbell takes it right in the box and smashes it in the back of the net. Always aware is...
Get stuck in! Kevin
Campbell. Damn, amazing.
Get stuck in, everyone. Say hi, Kevin, officially.
Hi, everybody.
And my podcast sister, of course, Miss Princess Guna. We saved the best till last. Hello, girlfriend.
Hello, girlfriend. How are you doing?
That was good. I just gave you a little bit of the Americanism right now. I'm doing great, and here's why. You two have been raving about this young fella for a number of years. You have both had the pleasure of being in his company. Kev has had the absolute pleasure of being coached by him. Theo Foley has been involved in professional football for over six decades as a player, coach and manager. During the early days of his playing career, whilst captain of Northampton Town, listen to this, Guna Nation, Theo also ran a pie and chip shop to supplement his income from football, a far cry from the riches footballers enjoy today. It wasn't as easy back then. In his new autobiography, Theo, Give Us a Ball, A Life in Football, he's co-authored with his son, Paul, and Theo details the highs and lows of professional football. And the foreword is by none other than one of Arsenal's greatest managers, George Graham. But as Super Kevin Campbell said, George Graham couldn't have done it without him. Please give a very warm welcome to the Highbury squad for Mr. Theo Foley, kids.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I'll just get stuck right in here, as Super Kev says. You know, you played in four divisions of the Football League, as it was then. You also played for the Republic of Ireland nine times. And you really had an extended career as well, Theo, in coaching. Let's talk about that bit, because this is the bit of the book that I really love a lot. And in terms of the write-up for the book, is the comparison of how it was then to now. Before we get stuck into some nuts and bolts and anecdotes, talk to me about how you feel when you see the modern game today versus the type of game you were involved in at the height of your career.
That's a totally different game. Possession being the main thing, and people just have to keep the ball in order to make indentures in the other team's performance and the way the system that is set up. It's slightly different. It's not as exciting, not as thrilling. Developing some great players, but we could do really with the game a bit more open. It won't happen, obviously, but it is a great game. It still is a great game. But when you see the best teams playing it, then you realise how good it is. As far as we were concerned, if you had ability at all, you displayed it as quickly as possible and you got away from what you were doing. That's me.
It's honestly, Theo, it's such a pleasure for me to have you on our podcast, because I grew up Highbury. Middle 70s was for me, and I know you and George came in the 80s. Just a quick question about my podcast brother. What was it like to work with Kevin Campbell?
He was a wonderful lad. He was actually just about coming through when we were there. Ricey was a big influence on him. He had a great personality, and he was pleasant to everybody as he went around his work. Most people there were. There was very, very few people at Arsenal that were grumpy or anything like that, and Kevin certainly wasn't one of them. He's a great lad. I didn't have, you know, he only came into the squad. I wasn't involved with him as such. Ricey was, but there you go. Arsenal was a splendid club. And for Kevin Campbell, it was, obviously a place to be.
So easier to work with back then, Theo, than on the podcast today. Eh?
Oh, thanks.
There you go, Kev. No,
it's a pleasure.
No,
you don't often get top people.
Well, you know what he is. He's always on it. You know, and one of the things that he talked to us about, but I wanted to hear it from you and then get Kev's take on it with you on the line, because it's just such a wonderful moment. He was talking to us and has told us the story a couple of times of that first day of preseason, George Graham's speech to the whole squad, you know, where you had the elder statesman, you know, the team that was really the driving force behind the Gunners. And then, you know, you had the young guns like Rocky, like Kev. You know, Kev remembers that speech verbatim like it was yesterday. And it was his first day on YTS as well, which is unbelievable. Talk us through that first day and your memories and thoughts and the preparation as well, because I think from the book and from what Kev is saying that you helped prepare that speech too.
I did. The only thing I didn't prepare him for was I told you to come in a bow tie.
Very nice.
It couldn't have been a Thursday.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was Arsenal was is arguably the best club, in my opinion, in the world. Everything they do it properly. They try as hard as they can to please everybody, which isn't an easy task. But the young players are aware of the discipline. I don't know how strong it is now, but it was very strong with Ricey. It was with all of them. And over the years, they developed some wonderful players. There's no doubt about that. Kevin obviously found it hard, because it is harder when you're not being bought for big money as a forward player. But he was brilliant. I mean, people like Tony Adams, David Rocastle, bless him, Michael Thomas, you know, they were just superb players. And what happens is that you get a chance to show what you can do, because you know if you do the work, put the work in, you will definitely get a chance. That's me. That's the way I saw him. I didn't have great... I've never been to a place where... Well, I was at Burnley when I started. It was the same sort of place. But Burnley, unfortunately, let me go. What a mistake that was.
Theo, could you just explain to everybody on the pod what the mindset was like in developing young players? Because I think what tends to happen now is young players don't really get a chance. But when you and George came in, I think it was open season, because a lot of the youngsters were filled with promise, because it seemed that you were going to give them a chance if they done the work. So, you know, what was the mindset of you guys coming in?
Well, I think that what you do, Kevin, and you don't need me to tell you this, that if you're good enough, the only way to show how good you are is to get out there and do it. There's no hiding. There's like the Tony Adams, David again, you know, all the young lads, Mickey Thomas who come in the team, Martin Hayes, you know, players who were just getting in. And what happens is they get in the team, but they have to stay there. That's the hard bit. And at one time, there was about six of them in there, but they were bloody marvellous players. And that's what it's about.
Yeah,
well,
but Theo...
Well and truly.
Theo, if you remember correctly, and I remember this so well, you not only bought the likes of Lee Dixon and Steve Bold and integrated them well, but I believe it was the coaching that really brought the lads on, because the coaching was so good in my eyes. And is that something you still believe in, that if the coaching's good, you can develop the younger players quicker?
Well, if it isn't, Kevin, you shouldn't be there.
Very
you know
true.
What I mean? You shouldn't be in the place. That's your job, to coach and to help as much as you can. There comes a line where, as I said, when we got there was a lot of players that were moved out. When the players come in, the George, Bord, Alan, you know, all of them, you can go through any of them. They were all outstanding players. Kevin Richardson's another one who comes to mind. And Steve Williams, you know, there was players there that were just a joy. Paul Davis, they were just a joy to train and to work with. And I don't think anybody had treated them like we did.
Yes.
The reason for that was obvious, that that was the way, our only hope of getting them through.
Yeah.
You know, Theo, what you're saying is really interesting. And, you know, we talk a lot on our podcast about man management. You know, there's one thing coaching a team, but there's a totally different aspect of man managing a player. And it felt like at the time the coaching team at Arsenal really knew how to manage players and understand the character and their individuality. And I think you've mentioned too that Tony Adams had a great knack for getting the players going and firing them up in training. Yeah. Talk us through that a little bit.
Certainly, he learned from when George made him captain. He knew what George wanted, and everybody knew what George wanted. And George would never run away from anything that was necessary to be done, no matter how big they thought they were, or how high they'd fall. He always was aware of that. He had no sides, no bits, no favourites, really. And that's really what took him all the way along. He learned a lot at youth level, as I did, because I went in the other end first, and then worked really hard to make sure that players would understand what you were trying to do. It was very simple, really, George. It was just... everything he did was simple. And it's the same with me. I hoped I helped people. I never criticized them unnecessarily, nor did I talk behind their back and make out they were anything else. And that, to me, is very important.
Yeah, and we see too much of that in the modern game. And, you know, when you talk about Tony Adams and his impact on the pitch, and, you know, the fact that it was almost like having another coach on the pitch. But I also think from anecdotes and books and things that we can look back on in the history of Arsenal and your time there, you had a massive impact. And maybe I'll let Kevin answer this first and lead into you. You had a massive impact on players and being that conduit between George and the players, because George could be a little harsh at times too. No, Kev?
Yeah. Sorry, Phil. Can I just say, I think George didn't want to be close to the players. I think that, in my eyes, that always was your job. You laughed and joked with the lads, and you kind of got around them. You know, you were like a glue. Whereas George was a lot more serious. Training was serious. Training was tough. And getting that point across, you know, George had the respect of the team. But you needed that softer side. I mean, you were tough as well, but you were kind of more approachable. And I believe that really made for a great double act, 1-2 punch.
Very good, Kevin. I would take the plaster off a bit softer than George would.
Yeah, big time. You'd rip it and he'd put his finger in it. Yeah.
Was it a little bit good cop, bad cop?
No, it was good. It was bad cop, worse cop.
I don't believe.
The only thing was, I always felt that George was always high and ready to be at them, which was his job. Whereas mine was to try and pick the ones up who he'd knocked down and pick them up and make sure that they were going somewhere. And there was a lot of good players there. Don't worry about that. But George's awareness of what was going on, he could always sense when it wasn't right with everybody. And he wouldn't say, "Are you happy with that?" He'd say, "This is what we're doing, so get on with it." You understand where I'm coming from? I would sort of reason it out if I could. And he would go, no, we're going, this is what we're doing. But he would listen. He would definitely listen to what I had to say. And for a Paddy, that's pretty good.
Theo, for the amount of years you're with us, the amount of players that came and, you know, come and go, out of all the talent that we had that you worked with, was there anyone that left us that you were really totally gutted about, that you could see great potential in, but just didn't make it under George, or George didn't rate him?
David Rowcastle.
Yeah, but he did make it with us, Theo.
Yeah, he did. David Rawcastle was a great, great player. To be taken away like he was terrible for me. Fantastic. Yeah. But then I have to go back to Tony because Tony was young. And even the older ones knew that George, when he made a statement and he stuck with it, Baldy, Lee Dixon, Winterbourne was a tremendous player. He brought good players as well, which was very, very important. And the likes of Kevin and other lads who were in the team, the young boys, they knew that if they were good enough, they had to be good, they would get a chance. He wouldn't go away from it. He wouldn't go, no, I'm not going to play. He would put David Hillier, people like that, he would put them in because he knew what he would get back from them. When he bought Stevie Ball, Nigel Winterbourne, Lee Dixon, players at the back, they were all right from Stoke and that and Wimbledon. But what did he see in them? He saw really good players. And maybe the other people didn't see it.
Theo, I think sometimes, you know, the likes of... Because when you first came in, Martin Keown left, didn't he?
Yeah.
He left. And obviously, a few years later down the road, Andy Cole left. You know, was there any regrets of those guys leaving? Because obviously Martin Keown came back and Andy Cole had such a fantastic career. Is there any regrets?
No. Martin Keown wasn't very, very, very respectful to me. I actually spoke to Martin Keown. And when I went in there, he said, I don't want to stay. So I said, that's okay. He said, what do you mean? I said, if you don't want to stay, you can go.
Yeah.
And that was me speaking because George was busy. Andy Cole was a really good player, but a very sour boy in my eyes. I didn't work with him then, but as a young boy, he was tremendous talent.
Yeah.
And you had to be patient. If you took George on, Kevin, you knew you were losing unless you were outstanding.
That was
the bottom line. And even in his darkest days, Tony Adams knew he had one person who always would put him in the team.
Yeah.
And the majority of the lads who were in the team meant the same. In other words, if you did the job, he didn't care what your activities were outside
it. Yeah, very true.
Can I just pick up on that, Theo, actually, talking about the activities? Because there was the Tuesday Club, wasn't there? There was a lot of drinking involved. And obviously now, it's unheard of.
I wasn't in that. I couldn't get it now. I was too old.
Nowadays,
we knew the Tuesday Club was going on.
Sorry?
We didn't mind as long as it didn't interfere with what was going on.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
Amanda, let me just tell you a little bit about the Tuesday Club. And this was one of the most important things about George Graham and Theo and that staff. When they came into the club, I think they knew that there were some cliques in the first team squad.
Yeah.
And what they said is, look, we're going to train you hard. We know you're going to need some downtime, but what we don't want is cliques. So it's either you all go out or none of you go out.
Mm.
That's why the Tuesday Club happened, because everybody just came together and wanted to be around each other, because the training was brutal. It was tough. Really was.
Yeah. It was good. They had to burn off all those calories drinking every Tuesday and beyond.
What Kevin is saying, if you went in the club, you weren't made felt a little bit different than anything else, but you knew if you wanted to get on with the teammates, that's the place to be. Now, that went on in most clubs in that day, and in my day particularly as well. There was a lot more people who drank. Now they don't. They speak French and they get in their cars and they go.
They certainly do. You mentioned a player, and I'd love to just hear one of your favourite anecdotes on Rocky Rawcastle. Obviously, he's a player that is revered in Arsenal's history. You had a really great relationship with Rocky. Give us an anecdote, Theo. Tell us something about Rocky that you loved, or one of your favourite stories.
I just couldn't describe him in words, but he was such a perfect gentleman of a boy. I used to bring him into my house and bring him to the training ground because he lived in Lewisham. He didn't have a car, but as a boy, he was just humble and he was himself and he was funny. He was good to be with. If you told him off, as most of them lads, Kevin will tell you, Mickey Thomas, Gus Caesar. Although I'm not saying that because of the colour that they were. I'm saying that they were just wonderful people. He was a wonderful person, David. And everybody in Arsenal absolutely loved him. From the cleaners to the office people, anybody. He'd walk in, hello. There was no barriers whatsoever with him. Wonderful human being.
Theo, could you just tell everybody how good he was? Because I remember at times, George, he was so good on the ball, George had to restrict him in training, didn't he?
That's great.
He did. He did. He was a wonderful player. There was nothing he couldn't do. And if somebody thought about kicking him like Stuart Pearce or some of them, that didn't worry him one bit. He didn't mind anybody having a kick at him. Whereas most wide players, if you kicked them, that would be them looking for the way home. No, he was a wonderful individual, and he had wonderful talent. Great control, great pace, great shot. So all in all, he was just a marvellous bloody player. That was him. And a wonderful person.
Theo, can I just ask something? Next week, we play Tottenham at the Emirates next Sunday. And obviously, for me, for all Arsenal fans, that was our biggest game. It still is. I don't care what anyone says. It still means so much to the fans. What was it like the morning of Derby Day? Say we were playing at White Hart Lane. And I'm assuming you all stayed in a hotel and you travelled to White Hart Lane. Did the players who weren't local boys really understand what it actually meant?
They certainly did, because the others had told them what it was like. The others had told them what it meant to Arsenal players, what it meant to Tottenham players. And Arsenal players would be thinking, they'll get sick, they'll have to stay indoors for a week. The Tottenham players were the same. I mean, no, that's embedded. Definitely, without any doubt.
So, Theo, it's great to know that the players actually knew what it meant, because it meant everything to us, and it still does. And we're already buzzing for next Sunday. So just like keeping with that theme, knowing what it meant to us, and then watching George Graham cross the divide to White Hart Lane to become their manager, what was your take on that?
Simple answer is, it was a job that came up, it was a great club. Don't let anyone kid you that Tottenham's not a great club, but it's just that was a job that came up, and he decided to take it. And he obviously knew he was going to get a fair amount of stick and abuse for doing it, and that's it. There's very little else I could say, but his type of person, George, was embedded Arsenal. And so are the Tottenham boys the same. So you just have to forget that and get on with it. And it was your job. And when you're out of work, that's what you do.
Theo, did you think at the time, though, when George did take that job, that it was, he was so maybe upset, a little bitter even, about the fact that he had to leave the club that he loved, the club that he resurrected? Do you think it was him kind of sticking the two fingers up at Arsenal in a way?
Yes, it probably was, but the biggest thing of all was that he's Arsenal through and through, and everybody knew that. But that doesn't mean that a party you can't splinter off and do what you do. I know that's a bit Irish, but, you know, that's how you are. But by the time you get, if you get there and you're working, and if you're out of work, that's what you do. And that's what he did. I'll be honest with you, I don't think anybody would doubt where George's love was.
Okay, so Theo, I get that. I sort of get it and I don't get it, because I don't think I could have done it. But knowing that he was Arsenal through and through, what was it like for him then on Derby days when all of a sudden he's Tottenham manager and he's got to play Arsenal?
He just didn't go on the dugout.
he wanted to sit in the right dugout. He had to sit in the wrong one.
Yeah, I mean, I have the same here at Millwall in Charlton. People always say to me, how could you possibly work at Millwall after working at Charlton? The answer is simple. I had four kids and I needed money.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And that's it.
It's a job.
I had great love for Charlton. And when I went and worked at Millwall, I can assure you I absolutely loved it. It was a great place to be. But you have to do it. You're just a professional. I mean, it's the only unfortunate bit is they're too near. So you're likely to get more stick than anybody else.
It's strictly business, isn't it? It's just strictly business.
Yeah, yeah. You turn it off. It's getting money, Kevin. And you just have to do it. And there's no other way out of it. And as far as I was concerned, I treat the football club with respect. If they treat me with respect, that's all I wanted. Arsenal, as I said, Arsenal was a fantastic club for somebody like me. So for George, it must have been absolutely heartbreaking. But there you go.
Yeah, and people didn't really earn the same kind of money back in that day. Now an assistant coach, someone, you know, who works for a Mourinho or a Pep or a Klopp, you know, those guys can easily retire on the kind of money that they're making these days. We do have some questions as well. There are a lot of Arsenal fans out there that want to hear from you as well. But before we get to some of those questions, I have to ask you this because Dean, who was very kind to help us arrange the interview today, shared some nicknames that you had for some of the players back in the day. And I'm sure Lee Dixon and Perry Groves will be happy to hear that we have our hands on those nicknames. Talk us through those a little bit. And how did Dixon become? Was it Wiggy?
Who?
Lee Dixon? Maybe I've got that one wrong. What was your nickname for Lee Dixon?
I don't know what it was. I can't remember what it was.
It was Wiggy.
It was Wiggy. Yeah.
It was.
And Marwood was Bumsy.
I probably had nicknames for everybody that I invented myself and put them in, and anybody who didn't like them would obviously call me Paddy. That was a simple way to get out of it. But I was never afraid, as Kevin will tell you, to pull anybody up, you know, and have a go at them on that. Dicko was a great lad. Grovesy was all right. You know, country boy, wasn't he? I used to give him a bit of stick as well. To be honest with you, it didn't mean anything. There was never anything nasty, and that's what they knew. I can't. What did I call Grovesy anyway?
So apparently, I don't know if I should say this out loud, but I will because it's a podcast, so we can. But according to my sources, Theo, you called Grovesy shithouse, and that's only because he used to try and trip you up all the time, and you would end up chasing Grovesy, which sounds about right. I mean, he was a bit pacey, yes, but I think you could have caught him.
I always had names for them, but I never more had any malice against them. I just, that was me. And they were the same with me. As long as I didn't go too far, they called me Paddy.
Well, I could add to that. Theo, if the player never liked the nickname, Theo would offer them out and say, like, we can have a scrap about it. I'm deadly serious. And Theo was a tough son of a gun, right? And the fights him and Niall Quinn had, a legendary, by the way.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Well, Quinny was another one. He was a stroppy devil, he was. he'd start running slow and be at the back, and then I'd go at the back and push him up. No, but I mean, the atmosphere then was really good, and that's what it was. I just felt that if I could liven it up, and I always had that Irish wit. When you come from where I come from, if you didn't have an answer, you must be dead or they'd shoot you. So it was as simple as that.
Okay. Theo, just quickly, can you explain when Rocky was trying to teach you to reggae dance?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. That's a great one. Well, what was so charming about him was that nobody could upset him. Nobody. And he was as tough as you like. And anybody who thought any differently got a shock. I mean, top players kicked him or, you know, get put at him. But he never, ever, ever showed what he really was. And as a boy, I used to take him to the training ground, didn't I? My house in the morning, I used to take him. And,
you
know, he was just one of them boys. And he wouldn't sort of put on you. But he knew the people who liked him and did what they did for him. George liked him, but he never probably got as close to him as I did.
Yeah. But Theo, it was the end of season party and some reggae music came on and you said I could do that dance. And if you remember rightly, Rocky was teaching you to do the dance and you ended up doing it. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Everybody was...
I remember that. I did it with your mum, didn't I, as well?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. That's epic.
It's all coming out now. Yeah.
David was, as I said, and they were just great. Mickey was great as well, and Kevin is Kevin, and Gus. Gus was a little bit more influential to me. It was more in the middle of the ballroom, as it were. No, my dancing skills are very limited, I'm afraid. Irish dancing, that was it, nothing else.
Oh, Theo, I've got to talk to you about my favourite night ever.
Oh, hold on a second.
No.
Is this the 1,578th time we're going to hear Amanda mention 89?
It could be.
Yes.
Hey!
It could be. I have a question for you, Theo, that someone sent in. I'll play in a second. But I couldn't let anyone down to say that I would not mention the 26th of May 1989. I was there, like you were and like Kevin was. But I've just got a question for you from someone that wants to ask you something. Hold on.
Fire away.
Theo, this is Kelvin, Princess Guna's dad. I just wonder what your memories are of that fantastic day. 26th of May, 1989, when we went up to Anfield and, well, we know what happened, don't we? Wonderful day.
It was arguably one of the best days of my footballing life. And yesterday, I think we could do it. I thought it would be bloody hard, and it was. But George was absolutely brilliant on that. It was just amazing what they did. The behaviour of the Liverpool fans, obviously they thought they'd won it.
Yeah.
Was amazing.
Yeah.
And they were stunned like we were. And when Michael Thomas scored a goal like that, everybody was stunned. But we weren't shocked. We genuinely thought we could do it. I'll never forget it. It was one of the best nights in football. And it'll never, ever happen again.
So
it was such a special night, wasn't it? Go on, Amanda. No one's going to take this moment from you. Keep going, PG. You've got Theo on the line.
Theo, I've heard so many different stories, some from Kev, some from other players, like Dave Hillier we've spoken to. I want to know, did you ever at any moment think that we were going to win? Because I think George did think that. He did say that if he got 0-0 to half-time, there was a big chance. Did you feel like that as well?
I did, because I felt that what he was preaching into them would stick, and they believed it. That was the reason it happened. No doubt about that. And he knew that they would get frustrated as it went on, and they proved that by taking Rushy off, which proved that they were settling for a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fact, which no charges. You can look upon George as being clever, but he was more than clever there. It was a mind game with Kenny, and obviously at the Cop, with all the fans in there who behaved impeccably. You know, when we give the flowers out and all that. And the hold up to the game was a big thing, I think. For us, not so much for them. But all in all, yes, I did think we'd win. But the manner in which we won was incredible.
Oh, yeah, It was the best footballing night of my life. It will never be beaten unless we beat Tottenham in a Champions League final in the last seconds. I can't imagine that ever be beaten.
You never know. Don't close the door.
I would never close the door, but I don't think my heart could take it if we played Tottenham in the Champions League final, if I'm honest. I couldn't even take it today after that Bournemouth match. But can I just ask you, Theo, after we've won it, what happened in the Liverpool boot room after the game with, like, Roy Evans, etc.?
Oh, they were absolutely marvellous. We went in the boot room, as we always did there. The whiskey bottles came out, and Kenny was there. And George and me and the rest of the lads, Steve, and Stuart and Pat Rice. They're just wonderful. It's how they took it as well as that, I don't know. Whether they all cried when they went out, but they were wonderful to us. The only thing is the whiskey bottles had to be emptied. And I mean it.
Theo, I think they're a great club as well, and especially what they've been through. 6 weeks previously at Hillsborough, it was so emotional that night. Everything was so emotional.
They're wonderful people. I think they are wonderful people. I live in Dublin. I lived in Dublin as a boy, and I think they're similar to that, similar to Cockneys and that in that they're close to everything. They haven't got any real sides. Some of them maybe react differently to other things, but no, it's wonderful. One of them, Kenny Dalglish, for me, is one of the nicest people I've ever met.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I love this Liverpool loving and this Liverpool love fest. But I just before we let you go, Theo, I have to know that moment that when you see Steve McMahon on the pitch, and it's the best clip ever, where he's telling all the players one minute, and they've got that cheeky grin on their faces as though, wow, we've got them here. Just hang on, boys, for one more minute. And then the most majestical call ever in the history of football commentary, Brian Moore, where he's talking about McMahon is down, everyone's abject. It's the best moment in football. And to be part of that, tell us about that a little bit, because at that moment when you see that, are you still believing with 1 minute to go that we've got a chance?
No, well, I'm telling Lukey to kick it. Mr. Wayne, I said,
everyone did.
Mr. Wayne, kick it.
Kick it, yeah.
Don't throw it out to Dicko.
That's what he did. No one wanted Dicko to
get the ball.
They said,
shut up, just get on with it. And that's the truth. They really did. I thought, why is he throwing the ball out? There's a minute to go. But that's how it was. And that's how it ended up. It was amazing.
Theo, can I just...
Flick.
Sorry, Gum.
Go on.
No,
you carry on. No, you carry on. It's important.
The little flick from Smudger was incredible. Chris Nicol couldn't make his mind up. And the keeper came and that was the end of it. I knew Michael would score. And he was the coolest man on the planet.
Yeah, but you say that, Theo, but he missed one a few minutes before. Very similar.
Yeah, he missed a chance.
Yeah.
He missed a chance, but if you get him in there twice, you definitely score one.
So, Theo, the last time we met was at the 89 preview where, you know, I was doing some interviews and stuff. I watched the film. Can I ask what you thought of the film?
It was very good. It was, it's difficult for me because I'm not being modest. It's not a big part for me to be in, but I enjoyed how it was done. I haven't have it in here in the room, but, yes, it was very, very good. I thought that the way you put it all together was absolutely marvelous in as quick as time as you did. And that's what it's about. But you've got to realize I'm not a kid in myself. I'm not a big fish in that pond. So I knew what it was like. And that's what I am.
I loved it. I loved it. I loved the bit at the end. People should go and get it for Christmas. But the bit at the end, the way they did that, I actually thought he wasn't going to score. I was getting very stressed watching it.
Speaking of things Arsenal fans should get for Christmas, there can't be a better stocking stuffer than Theo Give Us a Ball, a Life in Football. Honestly, it's the best. And you wrote it with your son as well, Theo. A wonderful book.
Yes.
So many great memories. And one of the things I was talking to Kev about before we came on air is there's so many new Arsenal fans. But to truly understand the history of a club, where it comes from, what the DNA of the club is, you really have to see and understand and look at the past. And that era and those moments that you and Kev were involved in are just as significant, if not even more so, than the Invincibles year. Because you guys laid the groundwork for Arsenal Football Club to be the club that it is today. And to be part of that must be really special for you to look back on.
Thank you. Absolutely brilliant. Paul is not well, and that's why he's done so well with the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in contact with Paul, and it was really lovely to get the book. I can't wait. I'm just started reading it, Theo, so I'll finish it soon. Just lovely. Lovely that we've got those memories and the pictures. Everyone should get this book, especially if you followed Arsenal in the 80s, that's for sure.
Yeah, of course you should. It's very good.
Guys, what I've got to say, Theo, I've got to thank you for really looking after me when I was at the club. Aww. Because not a lot of people know, me and Theo used to have a bet when I was in the youth team. And I used to take some money. He used to bet me I wouldn't get a hat trick and stuff like that. And I used to take quite a bit of money off Theo. Didn't I, Theo? Theo really looked after me, because at that time I was only earning $27.50 a week. And, you know, just on the first rung of the ladder. And Theo and I struck up a very good relationship. And it was a bit of motivation for me, Theo, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Sure it was. You were very lucky, because Royce is the same. Royce is a great lad.
Yeah.
Pat was a good lad. He was under pressure always, with everybody else under pressure to do well. And that's what he did with the team. And you came through, and that's what it's about, Kevin.
Yeah, brilliant.
Amazing.
Just got to thank you, Theo, honestly. Because I never got the chance when you left.
No, you could have come and seen me. I live in Blackheath. You could have come over and seen me.
But I wasn't in South London when you moved. I didn't even know you were gone. Next minute, Stuart Houston was the assistant.
Yeah. Don't forget, I came here in 60-odd, and I've stayed in this house all the time and travelled, as you know.
Yeah.
Because I like the house and I like where I am.
Yeah, you stay where you
there
are.
There you go.
Yeah,
I had
brilliant.
Four kids, and when we got a colour telly, that was the end of it.
Yeah.
Amazing, brilliant. Amazing.
What are you doing now, Kevin?
Sorry, Theo?
What are you doing now? What's your role now?
Well, I've been in security for nearly 12 years. Really enjoyed the business side of it. I'm an ambassador for the group. And it's really interesting. I do mentoring. I mentor young kids who get released from clubs. I also do stuff for the Bring Hope Humanitarian Foundation regarding a football initiative in refugee camps in Iraq and in Africa. And then I'm a dad to two boys who play football. So I don't really have much time to myself.
You're marvellous.
But it's good. Yeah. It's good to give back.
And he's a co-host here on the Highbury Squad Pod.
Yeah, I know.
We love
him.
I know he's
a big star.
Yeah, doing some TV, doing some TV work as well. And there's no man on TV that wears a dicky bow better than our Kev, that's for sure.
No, he looks very smart in a dicky bow.
He
I always turn the brightness up, so as I can see.
Well, Theo, I'm going to have to say that how about we bring you back towards the end of the season and we can see how the Arsenal have done and we can catch up a little bit more, share more stories from the book and get you back on here. And, you know, thanks to Dean, giving Dean a shout out for helping us arrange today's chat. And we wish nothing but, you know, well wishes to you and your family and Paul. We know it's not an easy time, and we just wanted to say thank you for making time for us today and sharing your stories. There's nothing quite like it, and we really appreciate that. Thank you, Theo.
Thank you very much. Give my love to everybody.
Oh, we love you, Theo.
Love you, Theo. Take Bye-bye. Care, and I'll drop you a text after, Theo.
God bless.
Take care.
You, Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Happy Christmas.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
So that was so lovely having Theo Foley on. Oh, I sort of feel like all like humble and honoured and stuff to have to chat to him, because obviously me growing up through the 80s at Highbury, he was just as important to me as George Graham was, you know. So thanks, Theo, for coming on. Right, well, you two, we played Bournemouth today. And I'm just going to say now that I'm hosting this part. And we haven't got the ref on today. I'm going to be the ref. Because if anyone could see our WhatsApp group, I go away for 10 minutes and there was about, and seriously, 19 messages between you two arguing. So I'm going to let you both get your points across. Okay. So we narrowly beat Bournemouth 2-1. It's given us 17 unbeaten, which is fantastic. Aubameyang scored, which is what we needed and what he needed. I thought our first goal was probably one of the goals of the season, the own goal. Poor bloke. I've never seen an own goal as good as that, apart from Dixon, when he did that at Highbury all those years ago. Yeah. And you know what? Overall, first of all, I absolutely effing hate that kit. I just can't even look at it. It just makes me puke. I don't even know what mint green's got to do with Arsenal, but forget that. It's not important. I wasn't entirely sure about the lineup when it came out, which is the first time I felt like that. Then I found out that Lacazette had a tight groin and it was a precautionary thing. Because obviously he's not going to drop him. He wasn't even a sub. And I wasn't sure where we were going with this, if you knew what I mean. But because I trust Emery, I didn't slag him off or anything. I was just like, a bit unsure about this. But I have to say, as the game went on, I do feel he made the right subs. But okay, so I'm going to go to Sophie first, and it's a very short answer, Sophie. What was your issue? I mean, short. what was your issue with how we played first half?
Okay, so in a nutshell, if I can encapsulate my WhatsApp convo with Kev, is that I was alluding to who we're playing next, right? And it's great. We've gone 17 unbeaten. And in that 17 unbeaten is a draw against Liverpool. Our first two games of the season, too soon, too close to call for Emery. You know, the Chelsea game, yes, we should have won. But my point to Kev was enough with the we should have won type responses, because we're now at a point, and yes, we're still growing with Emery, but we need to win certain games and win them convincingly. And my argument was, why do we have to suffer for the last 10 minutes in most games against teams like Bournemouth, Cardiff, Wolves, those teams we've been playing lately, who we haven't dominated the same way we should? Spurs ripped Chelsea a brand new arsehole yesterday. They absolutely thrashed them. And all I was saying was, if we want to beat the scum, we have to perform a lot better than that. Am I happy with our evolution? Absolutely. Are there improvements in the team? 100%. Are we seeing growth in certain players? No doubt. But if we want to take it to the next level, we can't just be satisfied with, oh, we won, but by narrow margins. And we're on a 17 unbeaten run, which is great for confidence. And you see that in the tweets the players are posting after the game. We just need to crank it up a notch. And I understand Emery doesn't have his own players yet. He's still working with Wenger's players and a couple of new signings that he made in the summer, that one of them is the most important player now for Arsenal, and that's Torreira. Why he made that sub, I don't know. But regardless of that, that was my point. Yes, we've made progress. Yes, we're doing okay. But we can't play like that against the big teams. And we haven't won against the big teams yet so far this season. That was my point.
Okay, Kev, I'm going to let you answer it.
Ding, ding, round one.
No, I'll be honest with you. The point I'm trying to make is on the WhatsApp was, you've got to take every game as an individual. We know our limitations as a football team. We know where we need to strengthen. We can't say we need to step up too much because we know this team isn't the finished article. We perform against Liverpool for two halves. That's the only game we've played two halves this season against a top team. That's the only time. So we will revert back to type. We started off pretty slowly today and we stepped it up second half and got the win. And that tends to be the way we operate. Who knows what we're going to do next week? Yeah, of course, we have to perform next week. But the way Arsenal are playing, can they step up big time? We don't know because we've only ever seen it once. So let's just take the win. And then we'll see how next week goes because we don't even know who's going to be fit, etc. Okay. That was my point.
Okay. And I get that.
But we can't get in the hole. That's my point. We cannot get in a hole against the Spurs. It's okay against Cardiff and Wolves and Bournemouth because maybe there's ways in the end where the quality and our quality in the second half killed them up front. Our quality in the back almost killed us. And let's give credit to Leno today because he was stealth at the back. But that's my point is you can't give me in the hole at half time against Spurs and just expect that we're going to be second half Arsenal like we've been this season. I think that's the difference.
Kev, can I ask you a question? So I sort of get what you're both saying. I'm sort of a bit more with Sophie on this. What we're saying is you throw me off when you do that. Kev, if we turn up at the Emirates like we do, and like we have, they will pick us off. So what she's saying is that can't happen. We cannot play as we have done today. What we need is, right, we need the ground to be rocking, which I think it will be. It's quite a good time, 2:15 on a Sunday. We need the team to kick off in the first half would be good and not let us concede. Because I think our little luck's going to run out soon. You were right. We have to give you right. You said 2-1. You said a hard-fought game. You were right. I was praying.
Well done, Kev.
Yeah.
Well done, Kev.
A couple of times he's got it right this year. I was praying I wasn't going to be right at 2-all. Absolutely praying that you were going to be right. And you were. So can you understand what Sophie's trying to say? If we do play like we did against Wolves and Bournemouth, do you not think after watching Tottenham yesterday, they weren't bad yesterday. I know Chelsea were awful, but Tottenham actually played well. Do you think...
Amanda,
go on.
It's like you're not listening to what I'm saying. You've got to take every game separately. Liverpool game and the Wolves game.
Yeah.
Both at the Emirates. Performances were chalk and cheese.
I get that.
Right.
So you're saying to me that Tottenham on Sunday could be completely different to what we saw.
It's going to be completely different because everybody knows what's at stake.
I agree with that, but it doesn't mean it's going to be different. What she's saying is if we do turn up like we have done, I know what you're saying. It could, the atmosphere, everything is going to be hopefully like the Liverpool match, yeah? Where we kicked off from minute one.
Exactly.
Yes,
but
we did.
Can you categorically put your hand on your heart and say it is? No, we can't, because we have been inconsistent.
Yeah,
that's
okay,
all
that's
I'm
fair
saying.
Enough. We have been, and we don't know.
The best thing.
Come.
Sorry, Amanda. The best thing that happened to us. Listen, I sent this message to you guys because I shared it with my little Spurs cousins, who are euphoric again as they were post Real Madrid. Their little WhatsApp group. I'm the only gooner in the WhatsApp group with 7 Tottenham fans and 2 Man United fans. And you can imagine how that goes. But my point was, this North London derby is poised just the way I wanted it. Spurs are coming off an emphatic thrashing of Chelsea. Their cockerel is so large right now. Okay. They think that they can conquer the Premier League and the world. This is exactly where we want Spurs. They're being lauded by the media. Everyone loves Pochettino, and Arsenal going into this, just scraping by beating Bournemouth. We're the underdog once again. And this happened two seasons ago. Remember that game at the Emirates on that soggy Saturday? I can't remember if it was a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. I think it was a Saturday.
Saturday.
Mustafi scored the header, right? And boom, we're 1-0 up. And no one was expecting us to win that game. And we ended up winning that game 2-0. This is the same recipe, you guys. Everyone going into that game thought we were going to get thrashed. Everyone thought that they were going to blast us. North London derbies are different to every other game. With that, I do agree with Kev in that you've got to take that one game at a time, especially this game. But for this game, we have to be better than we have been in our last couple games. That's all.
Yeah. And I agree.
We're going to get anything, we have to, of course.
I get what both you're saying
100%.
Now. Okay,
but so can we put our hand on our heart and say we will? We'd certainly hope so. You know, in our mind, they better.
All right, Kev, we can't play three at the back against Spurs. Do we agree?
No chance.
We'll get killed, right? We can't do that.
4-3-3.
4-3-3, absolutely.
4-3-3, we'll play.
And so who... I'd love to know, obviously, Mustafi and Sogradis, do you play holding or do you play Sogradis in that game? Or who do you play in that back? Bellerin, of course. It's going to have to be Kolasinac or Lichtsteiner. Actually, in this game, I play Lichtsteiner because he's a badass and he's going to piss off some Spurs players. Who's your back four? I'd love to know, you and Amanda.
Well, I think obviously Bellerin plays right back. If it was me, I mean, I think Mustafi sometimes is a bit rash. And, you know, he goes into some challenges that, wow, is just careless. So I'd play Sokratis beside Bellerin. I'd play Holding and Kolasinac will be left back.
And then your midfield is Xhaka Torreira?
Xhaka Torreira, Ozil, Aubameyang. Over. Laka and Iwobi.
Okay.
That's my team with Leno in goal.
Who's on the bench?
Anyone.
Anyone after that.
Bring them all on.
Jeez.
No, but you know what, though? Our bench has been very important. When he's made those subs, it's made a difference. So you may laugh, you two, at me. But...
Get Smith Rowe out there, become an instant goal hero.
Little Eddie came on today, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He did. Good to see.
Okay, so I've had two trains of thoughts today.
Wow. Is your brain hurting?
As you both know, because you have my WhatsApp voice notes, I went mental when Mustafi did what he did in the 90s.
Am I allowed to play it on here?
No.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Oh, my God, yeah.
No.
Actually.
No.
Where is it?
No, you cannot play it. Thank you. Anyway, moving on.
Just the one.
No.
Come on.
I need to.
I'm trying to find it, Kev.
No, we're on a professional pod. Just shush.
We're not professional. We're just fans. When I want to be professional,
I'm now professional. I'm not giving my permission to use it, so you can't. So, shut up, Kevin. So, Mustafi. Okay. I went mental, as you know, that he's done that in the 94th minute and 10 seconds, right? But I was speaking to a couple of friends, you know, and apparently it was a very good idea of what he did because they could have scored from what Mustafi... Right.
No, Bellerin was in front of him. Bellerin was in front of someone else.
Okay.
Come on.
I haven't watched it again, but it was just the conversation after. Yeah, okay. So I wanted to get your view on that. Okay. I think he's a liability. I just don't know. I can't work Mustafi out. Sometimes I think he's okay, and sometimes I don't. No, we definitely can't play three at the back.
Look, Xhaka, Sokratis, and Mustafi are red card liabilities in the North London derby. And Sokratis has never played in a North London derby before. Okay, Mustafi and Xhaka have now. A lot of people are commenting about Xhaka and how he behaved after his yellow card today. And I agree. I think he showed a level of his head. He made better decisions. Right. But he also gave the ball away a lot more when Torreira went off. Would you agree, Kev, that there seems to be Xhaka now, I think, really relies on Torreira to be able to actually be the player that we've always hoped he could be?
Yes. Yes. He leans on him quite a bit, yeah.
Right. So I think with Xhaka, I'm hoping he's mature. I hope he's not going to pull a Coquelin. You know what I mean? Like Coquelin did in that 2-2 a couple of years ago, where Harry Kane scored that insane goal and then Alexis got the equaliser with a Lloris blunder. So discipline is huge in this game, and it's going to be important for a Xhaka who's taking the leadership role as captain really to heart. And I like seeing that about him. I've given him so much crap, but I do like what he's saying about this responsibility. And Emery sees something in this guy that he trusts in training week in, week out. So I'm going to ride that wave for a little bit and not get too upset about Xhaka being in the team. But we really need the Xhakas and the Ozils to guide some of those other players that haven't really been in this moment before. But we also need Ozil to have a massive game. We need Ozil, Oba and Laka to be massive in this game, because we know we're going to concede, but these guys have to be on their game. And the one player that can't play in this, and Amanda, I'll let you take it away after this for a little rant, is Mkhitaryan. What has happened to Omiki Yusufyan? You don't actually blow my mind anymore. Hey, Mickey.
Do you know what? I don't know. I think he's getting worse every game that I see him. It's such a shame. I really enjoyed him when he first came, but not anymore. And I don't understand why he wasn't substituted. This is the first time I've queried it. Some were saying to me that it's to gain his confidence back, but it's quite important at 2-1. Well, I'm not worried about his confidence, if I'm honest. But you know what? Emery got it right. We didn't lose. Kev, what do you think's happened to him?
I think he's lacking confidence, if I'm honest
with you. Right, so it is that reason.
You know, when you're actually playing and things don't come off, your confidence level can drop because it's not coming off for you. No player goes out there to play poorly.
No, of course
not. But it's just not coming off for him. Maybe he needs to, you know, have time on the sideline and then come in again and may influence a game from the bench or something like that. But he just seems to be lacking a little bit of confidence for me.
Yeah.
And you know what? It makes such a difference when Ramsey comes on, doesn't it?
Well, in what way?
Well, I just feel like I know it sounds odd being the fact he's quite young, but I feel like a dad was coming on the pitch. He took the ball. He knew what to do with a couple of minutes to go. He wasn't being stupid. You know, he was trying to keep possession. I want to know something, Kev, because another one of my voice notes. I'm screaming for them to keep possession and go to the corner flag. Well, what are they doing? And go on, sorry.
Go on. You were going to say something.
I was going to say something about Iwobi, okay? Now, I do blame him partly for the first goal, absolutely. But I also
100%
blame...
Hold on.
But we're down the other end, Soph. They still got to go through the whole team to score.
Yeah, but we weren't covered at the back there. We were actually in their penalty box. We were on the attack.
But hold on a second. You've got...
Don't try and pivot in the penalty box and be flash, dude. Make a pass.
Okay, so he's partly to blame. But where's our midfield and defence? I'm not being fair. Where are they? So I'm not going to blame Iwobi for that completely. That's what I'm trying to say. But Kev, let's just go back to my previous point about Ramsey. I like it when he comes on, but I want to know why they don't go to the corner flag.
Maybe they're trying to score again.
You don't do that, though, Kevin.
You think about it. The mentality isn't sometimes to hold on to it. Sometimes the mentality is we can score again because they've got that much belief in themselves. So, you know, they'd rather win 3-1, but it doesn't make great for the nerves of the Arsenal fans, does it?
No.
You know, when they play like that.
Possession, you know, is much more important.
It's terrible. It is terrible.
To retain it.
But I think a lot of Arsenal fans, like yourself, are considering, you know, the game management. Where is the game management? Just to concede before half time? Fair enough, you're in the attack, but you've got to make sure you shut up the shop and go in at 1-0.
Yep.
You know, you have to do that. And Arsenal just seem to lack that game management at times, especially end of the first half and second half.
So who do you blame? Do you blame Iwobi or the rest of the team or what? What's your view on it?
I don't blame Iwobi. Look, if a forward loses the ball at the top end of the pitch, that's the place to lose it.
That's my
now
point.
They've got to travel 80, 90 yards to score. And someone's got to take one for the team. Bring somebody.
Yeah, but
down.
when we're playing three at the back, we become vulnerable in that situation, don't we, Kev? Because now the team is on a counter attack, and we've committed the wing backs to the attacking play. And Torreira's positioning, I'll give you that. In that equalizer, Torreira's positioning was completely off. But we were in the penalty box at that point and looked like we were actually going to score. And so I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but 100%, like at that point, we're committed because the system we're playing makes us vulnerable on the counter. And that was my point earlier. Like, if Bournemouth can do that to us, what could a team like Tottenham taste like vinegar coming out of my mouth with the way they're playing over the last couple of weeks can do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But look, when you're a defender, when you're a defender in a team and the team are attacking, the defenders have to think the negative part. We are going to lose it. You know, we have to make sure we stabilize in the center of the pitch. You've got to think like a defender in order to protect your goal. And it may seem crazy that you're on the attack, but that's the way defenders have to think. What I believe is everyone starts thinking of attack. The defensive side goes out the window. And then when we lose it, that's why we're so open. It's crazy. But it's funny. That never really happened against Liverpool.
No, we were more disciplined against Liverpool. This is the respect factor, is it not?
Exactly. That's why we've got to take it on a game-by-game
basis. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know, because they respect Liverpool enough that they cannot mess about. We want the Xhaka who played against Liverpool, not the Xhaka who played against Wolves, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
100%.
I think
that respect for the opposition actually counts. It really does count. And they will be better against Spurs. I hope and I believe they will be.
I'm looking forward to it.
I believe that.
I want to just say that.
I believe that.
I think Mustafi should have taken him out. That's what you said, take one for the team. But anyway, let's not dwell on it. We won. It's 17 unbeaten. It's very exciting time still. We're 1 point behind Chelsea. If we beat Spurs, we're level with them. You know, the season isn't so bad at the moment, is it? We're in the Haribo Cup, as I call it. We're playing them in a couple of weeks. So let's just, as we do, game by game. So, as we're discussing this, let's have a prediction, Soph.
All right. Are we going to do Twitter questions on Twitter then? Because we've run out of time. Because
I think we should.
Had so
I think
much fun with Theo.
What we'll do is, because we work really hard and Kevin doesn't, Kevin can answer them all.
Amazing. Oh, it's so much better when Kev answers them anyway, to be honest with you.
All right, Kev.
Listen, if there's anyone who's on all the time, it's, and by the way, I'd like to throw it out there to my comrades here. They've been doing an amazing job with the pod lately, and I've been so busy at work and it's been a bit tough, and I just wanted to say thanks to everyone. I lost my best friend, my dog Dino, who I've had for 15 years, and I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who reached out and said, you know, that sent their condolences. If you are a dog lover and you have a dog, they really are part of the family, and the unconditional love they give you every single day fills your heart and your soul with so much happiness, and they fill the house with a vibe that sometimes we humans can't. So I just wanted to say thank you, you guys. You rock, and you've been amazing. So I love you guys.
Lovely. Aww. Lovely.
Well, big hug from us anyway. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get stuck into some predictions.
Right,
come on,
well, you're not allowed to change them because King Kev has a go at you if you change predictions. So whatever you say now is your prediction for the Tottenham match.
Are we doing Tottenham or are we going to do Volshka Moshka first?
No, let's just go Tottenham. Not many people are interested in Volshka away because we've qualified and it's Volshka away.
Okay, and also we should just send all of the children and their children to that match. Agreed?
Oh.
Send the youngsters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The third team, definitely.
All right, Tottenham at home. I fancy us in this game because I think that even with Wenger's team, there was something about Wenger that he translated to the squad where they knew what it meant to play Tottenham. And I have a feeling that Emery is able to do the same. because Emery's been involved in massive derbies in Spain and in France. He gets it. And so this is why I feel like in the interdull, he was prepping more for Tottenham than he was for Bournemouth. And it showed today a little bit. So I'll give him a pass. So I will say that we will win the North London Derby 3-2.
Oh, my God.
Bank it, baby.
That's what I was going to say. All right. Well, I'm going with it the same. I'm saying 3-2 because that's what I was going to say.
I can't take it.
I don't need the spiel to go with it. I'm just saying 3-2. Kev?
I'm going 2-1.
Right.
I believe it's going to be pretty tight. There's going to be – obviously, nobody's going to want to give an inch on the day. But I just believe Arsenal being on this run at the Emirates will be rocking.
Yeah,
rocking.
And I truly believe he's making sure Lacazette's going to be fit for that
game.
Yeah.
100%.
He's not going to take a chance on that groin. He's going to make sure he's fit. So, and I think Lacazette's going to come back with a bang. And we're going to win that game 2-1.
All right. Well, you're 2-1. Me and Sofa 3-2. May have done that with Ozil today as well.
I was going to say
not
that,
bringing him
PG.
On. Yeah.
Yes.
He's not stupid.
Yes.
Listen, as Kev said, you know, well, you said, he knows what the derby's about. He's he's a professional manager. He knows Ozil's on the bench if he needs him. He obviously felt he didn't. I've got no problem with that at all. So
we're going to be ready. We will be ready for that game. We will be.
This game, this build-up for me is so stressful because ever since 1970, God knows what. This week before we go to White Hart Lane or we went to Highbury was always so, like, you get to Friday and you're just plutzing for England and everyone knows what that means. And I'm so excited to be going back to the Emirates next week and it's Tottenham because they do think they're going to beat us. I've got many Tottenham friends that do think they're going to beat us. As you said, Soph, they played against Chelsea. They're cocky. They think they're, you know, the bee's knees. So it's going to be good. And we need to rock that ground. We need to drone them out with that stupid effing song, right? And just sing our hearts out all games. Yes!
Come on, you've got us!
Exactly. All week it'll be like
get
this each night.
There.
And I'll be sitting there screaming my head off because it's bloody Tottenham.
No. So,
yeah,
God,
we've got to win.
We've got to win.
We've got to win.
Because
come
if we don't win, forget the rivalry. It's 6 points ahead of us. And I know it's only virtually, it'll be what, near, well, December, but I don't
know.
No, four.
No. They're 3 points.
Yeah, and if they win, it'll be six.
Oh, I thought you meant if we draw. Yeah.
No.
If they win, yeah.
Yeah.
No. We've got to win.
And normally I would say I'd take a draw, but I wouldn't on this.
No.
We're all gone for a win. I don't care who's right that day. As long as one of us is, it doesn't matter. So,
I feel like this could be the moment Ozil truly, truly, my hair's going up. Stop me. I do feel, Kev, Amanda.
I love
it. Like
it can't go any higher.
I feel like this is his moment. This is the game where he solidifies his legendary status at the club. This game with some type of magical moment. I feel it. Harry Kane's going to have one because he loves to score against us. But Ozil has to have the final say.
Do you know
and
what?
I feel like it's his game.
I don't. I'm not saying it isn't, but I have a little feeling for Xhaka in this game. An absolute screamer. I don't know when.
I'll take it.
I don't know when, but I've just got a feeling. And he has calmed down with the red cards and stuff, and I don't really see that happening. To be honest, they're not like they were when Kevin was playing in the 80s. It's very different playing them now. And, yeah. Well, all I can say is it's very exciting with the build-up. Yes, we do play Vorsklath Thursday night. We hope that we take the kids. We've already qualified. We're not dismissing it, but it's really not of interest now as we have qualified. Let's take the kids and let's get this build-up ready. And come next Sunday at 2:15, that Emirates better be rocking. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, because after that, we've got Man United.
It just it comes thick and fast. And we play Liverpool the end of that month as well.
That's
so.
Right.
Right, you two. Thank you very much. It was fabulous having Theo on. Fabulous speaking to you two. But always Arsenal.